Today on Movie World, as we talk about Edge of 17 and Loving. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
Hello. So I think we should start the podcast with what Yazdi just asked us.
So what, Yazdi, go ahead, and what did you just ask us?
You know, because of the Asian Film Festival, which was going on.
Yes, which Yazdi was a juror for. Yay.
Yes, yay. Last week I missed several screenings, important ones because so the film festival. So the ones I missed was Loving as well as Doctor Strange. And right after our podcast, I have free time and I was asking them, which one should I watch? We've already discussed Doctor Strange at our
last episode.
And then we're going to talk about Loving.
And I said,
Rashmi said, Doctor Strange.
And Joe said,
Loving.
So with that,
I'm going to watch both of them at once.
With that, we can launch into our review.
On a review of Loving.
Okay, so I think, yes, you have the intro for that.
Yes. So Loving.
Which movie shall I watch? It's the most critical question.
Yes, it is. So Loving is the latest movie from director Jeff Nichols. And if you're any manner of a film lover, you should know about Jeff Nichols because he's directed some fine movies in the last decade. He's made Shotgun Stories, Take Shelter, and then more recently he did Mud with Matthew McConaughey. And then last year he did Midnight Special. Here he is with his latest movie, Loving. And Loving is based on a true story of Richard and Mildred Loving, which were one of the first interracial couples in the United States in the mid-50s. And they essentially had to take their case to the Supreme Court because at that time, Virginia had a law which banned interracial marrying. And there was a very good documentary which came out called The Loving Story, which essentially was about these two individuals. And Jeff Nichols wrote the story based on this documentary. And the movie stars Michael Shannon, who is in all of Jeff Nichols's movies. But in the two main lead roles, we have Ruth Negga, as well as
Joel Edgerton.
Yes. So I'm dying to see this one. It's been on my to-watch list for a long time. And it's a curious choice for this director because he doesn't usually wallow in sentimentality. And this seems a very sentimental story. So I'm curious.
Well, to answer your question, Loving trumps Doctor Strange in every which way possible. Aww. unless you're like a hardcore Marvel action fan, but
or Rashmi.
So I'm kind of interested to hear your opinion on this because this to me is probably one of the finest movies of the year. I think the standouts for me are, number one, I'm not really familiar with the story, so I think not knowing the realities and the difficulties that this particular couple endured, because of some of the outdated laws that were in place at the time that they wed, is kind of fascinating to me that happened in any kind of modern era. But more than anything, I think this movie is just so beautifully restrained. There is not a single word wasted in this movie. It is so measured in the way that it tells its story, it tells its plot, that I marveled at, there's a scene where, and this isn't a spoiler in any which way at all, but there's a scene when there's kind of a car journey and somebody's leaving and the ancillary character just says, if you need anything, just call. There's no kind of long protracted goodbye but you immediately understand the connection between the two characters just by saying those very few words, and the whole scene pivots around those words, and then the rest of it is visual. And this movie does that to me time and time and time and time and time again. It's so measured, it's so sparse with its dialogue. It reflects the characters beautifully because I think the male character, the Richard Loving character played by Joel Edgerton, who is Oscar worthy, and like, you know, give him that statuette right now in terms of my impression. This was superb. I really thought this was a fantastic movie.
So I would suggest that you spend your money on Doctor Strange. I mean, first off, look, this is a great name for the movie because, you know, yeah, anyway, I didn't get that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I really wanted to love this movie and I didn't. And actually, I felt a little exhausted by it all because it's such a slow burn. And for the same reasons, Joe, that you liked it, which is that it had such sparse dialogue. To me, that played like such sparse story, and I needed a little bit more depth. In fact, I was so exhausted by the slow burn, I think I was actually snoozing every 10 to 15 minutes. I can't fault it on direction. I can't fault it on acting, which is great. It just didn't speak to me about the time or the struggle that this couple dealt with and how it affected them, other than the fact that they had to live away from their family or they had to leave Virginia. And I think it got me thinking about when I think about test cases like the movie Philadelphia or even the movie Woman in Gold, which I didn't love, they move you or change you. And this didn't happen for me at all. I just felt overall it just lacked depth. And I should have been that, yeah. You know, you were saying about the movie Moonlight, Yazdi. Mm-hmm. I should have been a puddle, a mess. This should have, like, got under my skin and devastated me. Because even though this is about an interracial couple, I think it's relevant today when you think about same-sex marriage or anyone being denied the right to be who they want to mm-hmm. be. And but, so I think it should have really devastated me, and it just didn't.
I am admittedly a sucker for movies about injustice. And I think
right.
the difference between a movie like Moonlight and a movie like this for me is that in this movie, everything is between the lines. It's what's not said. It's what's not depicted. It's Moonlight was very overt in its dialogue. And I think, you know, I didn't mention this in the last podcast, but, you know, at times that dialogue was pretty clunky. Here, it seems as if they took the screenplay and they took a red pen and they crossed out everything that didn't propel the dialogue forward in some way. Nothing is wasted, not a single scene or line of dialogue. And I was marveling at this. In fact, it was distracting to me at some point in the movie because I was just so distracted by, like, you know, how efficient the use of words were. So, you know, but I think because of that, everything that I felt about this story was not in terms of the melodrama that could have been a very melodramatic
correct.
Movie.
Correct. You know, I agree.
People being torn away from each other, and you know, they're if you've seen the documentary and you know about the story, you know that there's jail time involved in terms of, you know, what these characters had to go through and the injustice that their families had to endure and them and you know the way that they handled it. So I think it could have been done with great kind of, you know, melodrama.
A heavy hand, yeah. It's not heavy handed.
Dramatic
I agree.
Music and it's just done so subtly and so brilliantly. So, you know, I'm throwing superlatives at it because I just think it's such an incredible piece of work. And I think it did to me what Moonlight may have done to you.
Yeah.
Just in a different way. So, you know, again, to Doctor Strange versus
yeah.
versus
I suspect,
Loving. It's just not even in the same league.
Yeah, so I suspect, Yazdi, knowing the type of person you are and the type of movies that appeal to you, then I think you will get more out of Loving than you will out of okay. Doctor Strange.
Okay. Well, I plan to see both, but I will, yeah.
Yeah, so I prioritize Loving for you particularly.
Okay.
I mean, I have to agree with you, Joe. I think Joel Egerton was incredible. And the only reason I know he's incredible, even though he probably has like 15 words in the whole movie, it feels like. But the only reason we know he's so incredible in this movie is that because we've seen him act in other parts. Yeah. And this is like no other character that he's played. But again, Joe, to the point about subtlety, it's just a little bit too subtle. I think you don't need a sledgehammer, but you don't need a scalpel either. And I think that's what was missed for me.
Yeah. I mean,
so you wanted it to have stronger emotional beats.
I feel like, I felt like it needed a few more highs and a few more lows and the difference between them needed to be a bit higher in differential.
Yeah. It's a low amplitude.
It's a low, that's a drama, nice way to describe it. Yeah.
But that's because I think the highs and lows are filled in by my own thoughts of the movie afterwards. Right. Which, again, I think.
Right. And I think, look, I think it's a really important movie. If you think about the relevance of race, even today, right? We just had the election. I don't want to get political. We just had an election. We've just gone through a difficult time in the US. We're a country divided. This is interesting, right? This is not any interracial marriage, which you can, you know, you can infer same-sex marriage, but also about the divide about race. I mean, considering this is 1950s,
yeah, mid-50s.
67. I mean, you know,
1967, I mean, you know, 50 years later, we're still having the same debate. That's terrible. Yeah. But you know, it's relevant. And so I think it's important from that point of view, but I feel like it should have moved me a little bit more.
Yeah, and...
And I love a good love story.
Actually, it's funny because the obviously race is the big theme here, but that's not, for me, where the movie's drama lay. For me, it was the injustice. And I separate that from the race.
But the injustice is because of the race.
No, but it's the effect on the individuals. Like, the fact that one is white and one is black, it's just the effect, the impact that it has on them personally, I think is more important in terms of
yeah.
the way that this movie made me feel than I think the documentary would be a much more fascinating look into the legalities and the racial issues that were presenting at the time. But I think this movie is the effect on those individuals, and it's not that because one is black and they get treated one way and one is white, it's the injustice of the situation on the individuals involved that I think spoke to me most.
Yeah, but what fascinates me, sight unseen, I haven't even seen the movie, is we now recognize it as injustice. But at that time, it was not just accepted, it was illegal to marry. So, you know, that just amazes me about social reform, that often it comes down to one person saying, no, everything about that is being done about this issue in the country is wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stand up to it. Or, you know, the only way I can be happy is to kind of go against the whole system, you know.
So, but in terms of this story, yeah, no, I agree. Right. But in terms of this story, I think the white person almost is the one that suffers more than, you know, than the black. I mean, I think that's that's kind of what I think the movie was with.
Yeah,
maybe that's what they weren't. Maybe that wasn't what they were trying to say, but I think that's what I came away
with. So I think when I talk about depth, it's not just this couple, right? There's the male protagonist's mother involved, and there's also the female protagonist's family involved. And clearly both seem to be very close to their families. And I think it would have made for a better movie to understand how each dealt with that. And there's one scene in the movie which is I thought was very powerful, which is where the mother is speaking to her son. And that's a very powerful moment. And it's very, very subtle. It's very underplayed. I think I was looking for more of that depth.
But I think if we had been given more of those insights, then we would have ended up with August Osage County, right? Where you have all of these little characters coming in and screaming and drama and you made me feel this way. Instead, it's left off the screen altogether. It's in a word or two of dialogue and then you are slapped by that because so anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so my score is... Oh, did we score?
Nope, no, not yet.
Okay, so I'm going to score this. So I should have loved this. I didn't. I just left liking. So
loving, only liking.
Only liking. So I'm going to give this one... I would use a half now.
6.5.
Well, what
I would give it a 6.5, totally. But I'll give it a 7. I'll give it a 7. It had good production. It was well directed. It was well executed. It just lacked story.
I would say go see this for the performances alone. Everyone in it is brilliant. We didn't mention Ruth Negga's performance, but she's so entirely believable as this character.
She's exquisite, sweet and lovely.
And Joel Egerton, he's that kind of. Clearly the character here isn't, you know, a PhD, you know, level, you know, scientist. He is, you know, just a regular kind of blue collar guy, but boy, do we feel what he goes through. And that is, a lot to do with the way that Joel Edgerton portrays him. I mean, his physicality, everything. This is superb. I love this movie. 9 out of 10.
And wow.
It really is up there for me in terms of my favorite movies of the year.
Okay.
Moving on. Movie number 2 of the week then is Edge of 17. So I think, Rashmi, you're going to tell us about this one.
So The Edge of 17 is a new coming-of-age movie in the vein of 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club, an honest, candid, often hilarious look at what it's like to grow up as a young woman in today's modern world. So this is directed and written by Kelly Freeman Craig, a lot of writer-directors these days,
yeah.
And stars Halle Steinfeld, Woody Harrelson, Kyra Sedgwick, Hayley Lou Richardson, Blake Jenner, Hayden Seto, I think that's how you pronounce his name, amongst many others. So you saw this one at the Asian Film Festival, didn't you? And I yes. think Joe and I caught the screening. So, yes. Yazdi, why don't you start us off today?
You know how, gosh, the American cinemas in the last several decades has been, you know, the cinema about teenagers, right, growing up, and every decade has its, you know, the
John Hughes,
the John Hughes movies, and then, you know, we had the
attempt. Let's call it attempt at
Mean John Girls, Hughes. And you know, I mean, it's almost a rite of passage. Every decade wants to have its own version of the teenage movie. So I think it's a pretty high bar to say something of substance and for it to be authentic. And I think this movie, for being where it is, it never wants to comment on anything else outside of the very selfish brain of a growing teenager. But it does it. It clears that bar very easily. It's very, very well written, and like I said, its ambition never goes beyond watching this character kind of come to age as a teenager, and that's enough.
And
I liked it okay. very much.
Joe?
You know, I thought this movie was reasonable. It's a nice little return to form for Hayley Steinfeld, who's, mm-hmm. I think, been kind of
faltering a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, she's flailing at the moment in terms of her career after we saw her do such great work in True Grit early on. So I really enjoyed her performance here. I found the character herself a little dislikable. This movie kind of walks that line of being kind of overly cheeky, sassy, in kind of like a Disney princess gone wrong, and you know, I didn't quite buy its tone, and so I couldn't tell. It had some genuinely funny moments, but it wasn't an overt comedy. It was definitely trying to be more of a drama. But yeah, I couldn't escape the kind of. And you're right, yeah, you made the point that this is what the movie's about, but I can never escape the kind of. You know, life sucks because I'm a teenager type tone of the movie. So I found it a little irritating and I couldn't relate to it in the way that I think they wanted me to. But it was, you know, an above average slice of this kind of teenage type thing.
So I'm no longer a 17-year-old girl in today's world, but I was a 17-year-old girl at one time. And this movie just felt highly overacted and unrelatable.
Really?
I think it had some good moments, but a total fail for me. Really? I was annoyed like Joe versus entertained, and I felt like this brought nothing new to the genre, let alone a laugh. And it may be my fault for perceiving or seeing that it's being marketed as a comedy, which I certainly didn't feel it was. And I would say, Yazdi and Joe, to your point about Halle Steinfeld, I actually wrote down, poor Halle Steinfeld, where is the promise of that great actress from True Grit? I mean, although I think she shows range in this movie, the whole thing is just too pumped up on teenage angst and none of the payoff.
Really?
Well, it doesn't bring anything new to the genre. I mean, even, you know, when I look at, and I recommended Mean Girls a few weeks ago, right. One of our Netflix
Which picks, is so good.
Because of its punchy, punchy dialogue and its astute observations about what life was like. And I think this movie didn't give me that. It was trying to be sweet and sharp and,
you know. Sassy, I think you said the word, yeah.
Not quite there.
What did you connect with? Yeah, what kind
like,
of spoke to you?
I like two
you?
Things about the movie. One thing I really liked about the movie was that there are no bad guys, which is very true. I mean, there is no real, you know, villain in this. particular movie. I mean, people are just...
The main protagonist, I think, is the most villainous.
She's not villainous. She's just a typical teenager for whom everything revolves around them, right? And I think if you accept that, you know, being in her headspace, I like that her mom is the way she is, her brother is the way he is, her best friend is the way they are, and they're all doing their best, and yet bad things are happening, not because anybody intentionally wants to do something bad, but people are the way they are. They cannot handle certain things. So I usually tend to like movies where you don't have black and white, the bad person and the good person. So, there isn't a bad person in this movie. I also like that a lot of this movie was about brothers and sisters. There's, you know, a big portion of this movie is about her relationship with her brother. And movies, especially teenage movies, seldom kind of get that deep into it. And I like that. I really like that part. And then the one other piece I liked is that, I don't know, I've been to my share of parties as a teenager where I felt completely out of place. And it was like complete deja vu for me when I was like, oh my God, I remember those years. You know, when you're at a party and you're like, oh, I would go to the restroom and like, you know, like
read a magazine.
No, as a respite right. from, you know, interacting with people.
Because I still do that.
I was so
still does that.
I was so socially awkward, and the movie kind of gets that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not high art. It's not, nobody's going to even mention it anytime close to the Oscars. But I think for being just a movie about a teenager trying to kind of figure things out, it's decent.
So this is the biggest problem I had with the movie, okay? I buy what you're saying, Yazdi, and I kind of empathize that you felt that way about it. But the biggest problem I had was the relationship between Nadine, this Hailee Steinfeld character, and her teacher, Mr. Bruner, who's played by Woody Harrelson. And it's played very well by Woody Harrelson. And even though nothing happens, it just felt like an inappropriate and overcooked relationship that was just...
It was
so unreal. And that same mushy, sludgy, heavy feeling played again and again when we saw the relationship between Kyra Sedgwick as the mom and her son, who's Hailee Steinfeld's brother.
Lake Jenner, yeah.
And so there are all of these... it was just so heavy and bad that I just couldn't escape this feeling of, mushy overcookedness.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie...
Felt like porridge.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the character's not so super likable because I didn't quite believe the place that she got herself to, right? Where, you know, where she ends up... again, I'll say she ends up lost physically rather than mentally, but right, you know, right, that kind of moment, just thought, you know, I just thought, I don't buy that would have played out in the way that particularly did. But can we talk about Hayden Setso though? I thought he was great in this. He was the
underdog.
Edwin, right?
The character Irwin.
Irwin, yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
He's my favorite thing about the movie.
Me too. I can't wait to see him in something.
He's very good.
Something more. Now, Yazdi, you saw him at the Asian Film Festival. Did he turn up?
No.
Okay. No. Did anyone from the movie turn up?
No.
Okay.
But he's very funny. His comic timing and the way he delivered those
charming.
Lines.
Very sweet.
Very charming.
Yes. But there was an edge to him which I really liked, and the unexpected nature of kind of his
Yeah, his background and his art, yeah.
But I'm not defending her character, but that's how people are. They're completely clueless about
other
people around them. So
true.
Especially when you're a little teenage.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Joe, you go first.
So, I did enjoy it in the moment. I think this is kind of one of those movies that when it comes up on Netflix will be, you know, one of those ones that I'll say, you know, guys, this is worth your while. And I didn't hate the movie, but I just felt it was a little rough around the edges and lacked plausibility to give me the dramatic moments in the way that I think it was trying to, and it didn't quite work as a comedy. So middle of the road, 6 out of 10 for me, and nowhere near 17.
Hayden Zito, by the way, was also in another movie which played at the San Diego Asian Film Festival called Unbidden.
Oh,
but where he was pretty good in that. It's kind of a Asian horror movie, but which is kind of
I think we're going to see good things from him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I give it a very, very generous 7 out of 10. You know, it probably is more deserving of a 6, but, you know, it's Hayley's style.
But Rashmi and Joe are going to be so severe. Yeah. I've got to make up for
it. She was great in this.
Back of the plane movie, sorry.
Sorry.
And I don't know, I liked her world, and I liked how everything around her was breaking apart, where really nothing was. It was all in her head. And I remember being like that as a teenager. So it's nothing, no great shake. 7 out of 10.
Okay, this was supposed to be the next coming of the next coming of age movie, and it totally failed for me. To even hold it up against brilliant movies like 17 Candles or Breakfast Clubs is just a travesty and an insult, because there are literally no pivotal moments that you can hang on to. So I don't think any of this generation who will watch this movie in 10 years' time will say, oh my God, remember that great scene when... Let's hope this one gets through 17 and quickly moves on. Rent Diary of a Teenage Girl, which is a far superior movie instead. 4 out of 10.
What?
No, come on.
Booyah!
Yeah.
I didn't realize the movie offended you so much.
Yeah, I just...
Ugh. Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. No, I thought it was fine. Well,
I thought the writing was good. Okay.
And on that note, so it's interesting because the tomatometer is showing 94%. So clearly,
oh my
Rashmi,
God,
you're
I'm an outlier.
You're the one rotten of the 16.
I am the one rotten.
Today
tomato.
You are a rotten tomato.
Yes. I'm not a happy banana.
Okay, on that note, let's wrap up. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Let us know what you thought of these movies and others. We will be back hopefully with some Netflix picks in the not too distant future, so stay tuned. Until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye for me.
And me.
And me as well.